to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus with Bob Mendelson.
Tonight we're reading Matthew chapter 10. One of the considerations that people have about Yeshua and his comments is that he is a gentle, loving, almost nice deity compared to the Old Testament deity who was mean-spirited, old, crotchety, and basically an aggro deity. In Matthew chapter 10, we see something quite different. We see Yeshua sending out the boys on what might be called their first evangelistic campaign. And the campaign would well be summed up as campaign, because he is predicting that they're going to have some really tough times, as he is going to have tough times. And that consideration of his suffering, to which he's alluded only in moments, he will now continue to expose, so much so that by the end, of course, the cross is center point, not only of this gospel, but of human history. Father, we pray that you'd help us in this study tonight to learn and take on board this issue and really the purposes of suffering in our lives, for our friends, for our neighbors, for our families, for those we don't even know. God, give us clear vision for your sake, through his name. Verse 1, Yeshua summoned his 12 disciples. Kind of weird. They've been hanging out with him. But he had a staff meeting, and he gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. So whatever he was, he now made them into. Verse 36 of chapter 9, just a few moments earlier, we see that Yeshua was distressed because he saw the multitude, and he said to the disciples, there's a lot of work to do, so pray that the Lord sends out laborers. Then what does God do? He summons the laborers. He says, okay, boys, I'm going to give you the authority that I've had. The very same compassion requires the same authority, requires the same healing capacity. The word heal in verse 1 is therapy, which I like, which also includes taking care of or serving as well as healing. But it's every kind of disease, every kind of sickness. So that comprehensive, complete capacity within the disciple to do good in a dark world. So it doesn't say he's going to heal every disease or every diseased person, but every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. So did he heal everybody's flu? No, but they healed enough flus, enough viruses, enough epilepsy that he could have done the lot. Verse 2, he names them. And it's an unusual naming, isn't it? The names of the 12 apostles are these. What would you say? Simon, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Thomas, Matthew. You know, he'd list them. But what's different about this kind of list? Read it quietly to yourself. Look at verse 3. Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas, Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus. It's unusual. The word and in between each pair, he sent them out in pairs. There's no necessary joining of these, except, I mean, you can see some. Simon and Andrew, their brothers. James and John, their brothers. Philip and Bartholomew. Who is Bartholomew? Nathaniel Bartholomew. Thomas, Matthew. Matthew, the tax collector. He only puts himself in there twice in that way. Chapter 9, when he's introduced in that one line. Chapter 10, here he is. Kind of cloistered amidst all the others. Not really top billing, not bottom billing. Doesn't want to stand out. Simon the Zealot. And some people make a big point about his name because it's sometimes Simon the Canaanite. Comes from a word, Canaan, which sounds like Canaan, but it's spelled different, and it is with a kuf, and it probably means a fiery one, which is where we get the word zealot. It was an Aramaic word, not a Hebrew word. What in the world is Yeshua doing calling a guy who's a zealot, which means a political activist who wants to, who is actively trying to overthrow Rome, with Matthew? He chose political activism, politically activized. Oh gosh, he has chosen people who are on opposite poles of all kinds of reality, whether they are in politics or economics, they are in religion or as far from religion. Judas Iscariot, the one who's named more often of all the disciples, except for one. Which one is named more than Judas? Peter, number one. Judas Iscariot, number two. There isn't the other Judas, so it's possible his Thaddeus. Iscariot, a man of the village of Kiriot, which is down in southern Judea, near Hebron. So he's got guys from the north, from the south. He's got a wide council. These 12, verse 5, Yeshua sent out after instructing them. And look at all those red letters of Yeshua's instruction to them so that they wouldn't miss it. You know, sometimes when you get instructions and there's no written documentation and you go out in pairs, you say, what was it he said after that thing about kingdom of heaven's at hand? Oh yeah, go and heal. So there's corroboration. Part of the thing about pairs that's important is that you can't lie. We were just talking about evangelizing before the meeting began. Sometimes we go out on the street corners and hand out leaflets, and we go in teams. When we come back, you know, if somebody says, well, I handed out 250, and the other person said, wow, I only handed out 13. The 13 will say, how did you do that 250? I thought we were standing together. Somebody says, I handed out 800, and the other says, I only handed out 300. How'd you do in the same time I did? 500 more than I did. I mean, there's a good check and balance in going out in pairs that I find useful. I also find it exhilarating to try to compete with my partners. And I know that's probably not a good idea, but I think I'm going to be an impetus for them next time. If I go down to Central Train Station, hand out 800 in the same 2 hours, they handed out 350, I'll say, maybe next time you'll get out 500. So we're encouraging each other, but at the same time, we're holding each other accountable. And so we learned the lesson here in red letters. For you listening online, the words of Yeshua in some Bibles are written in red. And so it's for corroborating information given, for corroborating information returned. Events that happened. For instance, Monday last week was Erev Pesach, and it was a wonderful time. I hope you guys had a delightful Seder here or there. I did, with my sister and a few other Messianic Jewish friends in Kansas City. It was my only night off from a preaching tour of 2 weeks. On the Wednesday before Erev Pesach, I had spoken at a Lutheran church in Atchison, Kansas. It's a little nowhere village beyond the Black Stump, if you will. At that meeting, I met a Jewish man. What? A Jew at a Lutheran church married to a Lutheran lady. Okay. He's from somewhere, another city, and they had married. They had two young children, beautiful family. I met the family before the service. Was he a believer? No, not a believer at all. But he was attending with his wife and certainly came that night because he wanted to hear the Jew talk about the gospel in his Lutheran church. Lovely family. I took his number afterwards because I asked him, so you're a believer in Jesus as the Messiah? He hemmed, he hawed, meaning no, he's not. Okay, that's fine. But he was very happy to give me his phone number. We talked. And a few days later, it was Erev Pesach. So I'm in the grocery store buying some gefilte fish to take to the Seder. And I decide to call my friend Bill. Talk to Bill at length. Literally, I conducted my entire shopping on while I was talking on the phone. Said, we went over everything about the gospel. What's true, what's not. And finally I said, so are you, is there any, here's my question. Is there any good reason why you should not accept Yeshua as your Messiah just now? He said, I guess not. Okay, I said, put your phone on speaker and go get your wife. So he did. He was at home. So he walked into the house, put the phone on speaker. His wife, I think her name is Melissa. I greeted her. I said to her, Bill is ready to accept Jesus as Messiah. So I'm going to say some prayer. Bill, would you follow after me? Sure, he will. So he did. We prayed. He followed suit. And we talked several more times while I was in the area. And each time it was just a delight. But one of the reasons I had his wife on the phone with him while he prayed was for corroboration. She could say, I was there when. And he could say to her, you were there when. There's something about that. And if you ever pray with someone to receive the Lord, you're there with them, you're in the diner or whatever, just take your mobile phone out. Call me, call each other, call somebody and say, hey, I'm here with Menachem and he's just done something. Can I ask him to tell you what he did? Oh, sure. Hand the phone to Menachem and he says, I just received Yeshua as Messiah. Your job at that moment is to hallelujah, glory. That's great. Menachem, welcome to the Mishpacha. This is terrific. And that's corroboration. It's encouragement. It's a little church. Two people is a church. He's going to say this soon. Wherever two or more are gathered in my name, I'm rocking up. I'm going to be there. So when he sends out these fellas in pairs, mind you, he does not send any women in the pairing. That doesn't mean there weren't women there, but they weren't in the traveling community, in these small platoons. So he sends these fellows out to be miniature community groups, chavurot, to represent him. They are his ambassadors. Every king has ambassadors. We just got a new prime minister of Australia, has appointed a new ambassador, Land of Israel. Okay, so what will that person do? He'll represent Australia, Australian interests, Australian community standards to the people of and the government of Israel. That's what an ambassador does. He's a true representative. And if the people of that foreign country don't receive that ambassador, what should he do? Well, that's right. At a time, there certainly is a time when he has to walk away. Yeshua is going to tell him, shake the dust off your feet. Get out of there. You know about embassies that close in dangerous times, whether it was in Turkey or Sudan or under Gaddafi. I mean, there are times when embassies, whether United States or USSR, whatever, Australian embassy, they close and call their ambassadors home for safety's sake. Why would they need that? Because there's a riot. There are people who dislike the government that is represented by those ambassadors. So here he is. Yeshua summons them, gives them authority, and then sends them out. Verse 5. Don't go in the way of the Goyim, and don't enter any city of the Samaritans, but go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. I thought, said Bob, that this was a gospel that included Gentiles. Wasn't that what he did from chapter 1 on? He's always included them. How dare he? Well, he has to start at home. Charity begins at home. If a man doesn't look after his own family, he's worse than an infidel. Proverbs says the fool's eyes are on the ends of the earth. So take care of the Jewish people. That's what Yeshua has done. He wasn't born in Oslo, Norway. He was born in Israel. He didn't go to Johannesburg, stayed in the land, except for some occasional R&R in Lebanon. As you go, preach, proclaim would be a better translation, saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Well, that's exactly what Yeshua said. That's what John the Baptizer said. You want in on this. It's a kingdom thing. Remember, Yeshua in Matthew is the king. He's always been the king. He's going to die the king. He's going to rise from dead the king. Everything about him is kingdom stuff. I read a commentary on this passage, made a big deal that this was for the future, not for now. And I think, how do they get that? These very things that are the lifeblood of these disciples need to be the lifeblood of, point to self, these disciples. If it was good for that goose, it's good for this gander. There's something about Yeshua's presence with us that he summons us, commands us, and then commends us to the work. We are sent one. Now, not everybody in this class tonight is an apostle. Okay, apostle is a Greek word that means one sent forth. Really, we could say with a commission, like an ambassador. So in a way, we aren't the original 12, and even Judas got knocked out in place in Acts chapter 1. But there are 27 men listed in the Newer Testament as apostles with that word, apostle. Not 12, not 13, 27. What does that tell me? That tells me that it's not just the 12. It tells me that it's a perpetual, that it continues. Even Ephesians 4 says, when he ascended, he led captive a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men, and he gave some as apostles. So it sounds like when Yeshua ascended to heaven, after he was crucified, rose from ascended, that then he gave some as apostles. Sounds like there would be more after than before. Fine with that. Some secessionists, people who believe the gifts of Spirit are done at the time of the New Testament or the time of the apostles, miss that point. And one of them, which I read, and I actually enjoy his interpretation most often, missed it badly because he repudiated this red letter section and assigned it for that moment, skip us, and for a Revelation chapter 13 final wrap up. Well, if it was good for those guys and good for these guys, hello, I need it too. So what does he say? Don't go to the Gentiles, but go to the Jewish people. What do we read in Paul? To the Jew first. That's what he's saying, isn't it? He's not saying don't ever go to the Gentiles, because that would go totally against everything else Yeshua has taught and will teach. But as we've said, you got to go to the Jewish people.
people first.
And why would you do that? Why go to the Jews first? Don't have to tell Jews in the first century, hey, there's a God. Hey, there's a single God. There's a God who's righteous and holy. There's a God who's righteous and holy and from whom you're separated. We understood that. To a Greek, to a barbarian, to a Scythian, a slave, you had to communicate a lot more. So if you're in a hurry to get the message out, choose guys who understand the basics, the fundamentals. So find a fundamental there. Preach the kingdom of heaven's at hand. Verse 8, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. The same fourfold ministry that Yeshua demonstrated already, he now assigns to the boys to go and do likewise. Now, we don't see that in modern days everywhere, but we can see it somewhere. And it's not here in Sydney, or maybe it is. It's not in Melbourne, or maybe it is. It might be in the Philippines. It might be in Israel. It's happening all over the globe in different proportions at different times. There are healings. There are resurrections. There are lepers who are being cleansed and demons that are cast out. Those are happening. Yeshua says, freely you receive, freely give. Well, if you can get that down as a life principle, you'll get evangelism, you'll get tithing, you'll get personal charity towards others. If you understand that what you have is a gift, you'll pass it on. If you think you are a worthy person, deserving person, entitled person, because you have earned it, then you'll never get the freely gift. If you understand that you've received things from the giver of life, then giving is the nature to which you become committed. What's the best verse on God being a great giver? John 3:16. God loved the world so much that he gave his only son. So if God loves and therefore gives, and we receive and we love, what are we going to do? We're going to give. Freely you receive, freely give. I love that. Don't acquire gold, silver, copper for your money belts, or a bag for your journey, or even two coats or sandals or a staff for the workers worthy of his support. Sounds like John the Baptizer, doesn't it? You know, you have two coats, give one away. I traveled back today from the United States. I had three large boxes of books, CDs, DVDs. I got the new book, just one of it so far. The rest are coming. Jews Don't Need Jesus by Avi Snyder. This is a brilliant, I read the PDF of it just before it got published. This is a great book. John Piper writes the foreword. It is so good. It, you know, all these five volumes of Answering Jewish Objections by Michael Brown? That tells Jewish people about who Jesus is. What this volume, in single volume, does is it answers the objection by the church that Jews don't need or shouldn't be hearing the gospel. So it answers the evangelistic objection, not the theological. Or anyway, Avi does a brilliant job with it. Anyway, I'm schlepping all this stuff, and I'm reading Matthew 10. Don't acquire gold, silver. Don't take two bags. Don't take two coats. Thinking I've got three boxes worth of stock, you know. But this, obviously, it's a different matter. And I took my golf clubs. It was a pretty heavy challenge to get out of the airport easily. Nevertheless, I did. But what's his answer? Why not carry all that stuff? End of verse 10. For the worker or laborer is worthy of his wages. Okay. It's don't take stuff. You don't need a credit card for the hotel because people will put you up. You don't need to take extra food because somebody will cover you. You'll be shouted all the way around. And the Greek word for wages or support, trophies, provision, forage. Yeah. And whatever city or village you enter, inquire who's worthy in it and stay at his house until you leave that city. Can you imagine? Who is worthy? What's he saying? Who's worthy of receiving an ambassador of the king? Not who are the cool people, but who is able to welcoming. And we're going to see examples of that, aren't we, with Mary and Martha. We're going to see examples. We already saw that with Simon. As you enter the house, give it your greeting. Say a bracha over the mezuzah, something. If the house is worthy, give it your blessing and peace. How can a house be worthy or not worthy? So it's the people. It's the people who are the house, right? If it is not worthy, take back your blessing. Whoever doesn't receive you nor heed your words. I mean, they're about Yeshua. These boys aren't going out saying, hey, I went to University of Tel Aviv and I know how these things work. They're saying, I'm a poor fisherman and Yeshua, the king, wants me to tell you good news of the kingdom. So they're on a mission from God. These are like the Blues Brothers. They're on a mission. As you go out of that house or that city, shake the dust off your feet. Now that, take the blessing away. So you walk in, you bless it. Okay. There are situational blessings, if you will, in which we are required to extend grace and not justice, where we're required by the king to, when they persecute you, when they hit you with one cheek, hit you on one cheek, give them the other also. When they demand your cloak, give them your shirt too. There are stipulations that sound like we're supposed to be over generous and thus heap burning coals on their head of people who do us harm. Even he, when he was being crucified, said, "Father, forgive them. I don't know." At the same time, here these fellows are coming into town to communicate that the kingdom of heaven's at hand. And this is a political opportunity for people to give up their swords and follow in line with the king. So they are offering, if you will, a justice system to which they're calling people. And if the people reject it, he says, go find somebody else. So he's not saying, curse them. There's no curse involved. He's just saying, they're not listening. Go find someone who does. Remember in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, don't cast your pearls for swine. So we're always having to evaluate those to whom we're bringing the message. And if they are listening, then keep telling them. And if they're not listening, go find someone who does. That's a sensible way to deal with conversation. Take back your word, your blessing of peace might be better to say. I mean, think about it like you leave a present. I remember this story of a father who had a wayward son, and the son begged the daddy for a new car. And the dad said, look, I want you to read your Bible every day. You know, his 17 or 20-year-old son. On his 21st birthday, the father gave the son a Bible. The son repudiated it, put it up on the shelf or threw it away. No, he put it away on the shelf, put it in a drawer or something. And one day, the son was really mad at the dad and said, you know, all I wanted was a car. What'd you give me? A lousy Bible. He said, did you ever read it? No, I didn't want to read it. Well, had you opened it up, you would have seen the key to your new car inside.
The father died.
Yeah. So take back your blessing might just say, you repudiate the gift, you lose. And that's often the way I am when I'm out on the street corners witnessing, or when somebody comes into the shop, or I'm knocking, introduced by this person to Menachem or Bill or Fred or whatever. And whoever it is says, look, I don't want to hear about that. I had a lady, I went to synagogue the first Shabbat I was in. I went twice, once 2 weeks. First Shabbos I went to my old shul, and the second I went to a Messianic congregation. And one lady came up to me at the first. Her dad had been a teacher, a longtime religious director. I've known them forever. She's probably near 70 years old herself. No, she's probably 70 now herself, the daughter. And she said, you still into that Jews for Jesus? And I said, yes. She just turned and walked away. Okay, what am I going to do? Go chase her? What am I going to do? Go yell after her? No. But I sat with my friend Danny for an hour after the service. And he's a religious there at Shul. He got a senior gabbai. Long time. We were kids. And we sat and mused about anything. And faith didn't bother him. My faith didn't disrupt him. Well, I'm not repudiating him. He's not repudiating me.
Is he a believer?
Not yet. But there you go. Take back the blessing of peace when you are an ambassador. Verse 14, whoever doesn't receive you nor heed your words as you go out of that house or that city, shake the dust off your feet, which they did, by the way, in Acts 13 when Paul left that city. Truly I say to you, it'll be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. And you know that it's not tolerable. This is one of those exaggerations of Yeshua. I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be shrewd as serpents. I know you're going to cop it. I know when you go out representing me, there's going to be suffering. I know you're going to hear bad stuff. Well, that's right. When you went out on the street corner? Sure. I mean, people generally say nothing. They find us innocuous in their life. But there are those who really get aggravated by our presence, just our being. I mean, we find people who walk by our shop and spit on the window. Yeah. And we had a little old Holocaust survivor, remember the glue man, who used to glue our lock mechanism because he was just so angry we existed. We didn't say a word to him. We didn't know who he was. If he shuffled along in front of our shop today, I don't know that I'd remember what he looked like. Maybe I would. But this was several years ago, and to glue the lock, we caught him, and he apologized, said he would never do it again. But there are some who hate us because they hate the Yeshua whom we represent. It's not personally directed hostility, though it feels like that at times, but it's against Yeshua. We represent him. Beware of men. They'll hand you over to the courts and gird you in their synagogues, and you'll even be brought before governors and kings as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. There it is. Yeshua is going to include them as people who might hear the good news from the lips of you, Simon, and you, Thaddeus. This, of course, happened, didn't it? Verse 19, when they hand you over, don't worry what you're going to say. It'll be given you in that hour what you're to say. And it's not you who speak, it's the spirit of your father. This happened in Acts chapter 4 when they're brought before the Sanhedrin. Caiaphas, John, Alexander, and all the high priest's family were there. And they put Peter and John in the midst and said, by what power, in what name have you done this? In other words, we didn't authorize you. Who said you could go out and do this? Peter, filled with the Spirit, said, we're on trial because we healed a lame guy that you left lying there. Sorry. But let it be known to you and to all the people of Israel that by the name of Yeshua, whom you crucified, whom God raised from the dead, this man stands before you entirely whole. So healing in the name of Yeshua, persecution against the name of Yeshua, we're going to cop that as well as having the opportunities to proclaim him. But I love that. It's the spirit of your father who speaks in you. I can tell you a dozen stories in the last year of times when I have had no words say, and then all of a sudden, where'd that come from? I mean, anybody who knows themselves, they're not that clever. It comes from the Holy One dwells within us. And I believe that somebody in Albania or in Buenos Aires or in Tamworth is praying for me just at that moment. And God is answering that prayer. They don't even know why they're praying for me at that moment. And right then, oh, sit down. There's a man who comes by. Name is Joseph. I've known him for probably 10 years now. Holocaust survivor. Lovely guy. Really, one of the gentlest people on the planet. Tall drink of water. A hostile wife. And come in and buy little tchotchkes, figurine. But one day he came in and told us he was a survivor. Showed us his arm. And said, why? Question, no, you can't answer. Why did this happen? I mean, Art Katz has the answer, but it's a tough one. It's a tough one. So I said to him, because he threw it out in such a way that there was a pause at the end, and I was unsure what that meant. Usually a man with some kind of accusation carries it on and on and on. But he said something that allowed me not only to hear it, but to pause myself, say, would you like an answer? And instead of saying, no, there aren't any answers, like so many would say, he said, yes, I would. And I said, please, take a seat. He was standing at the, please, take a seat and give me 30 seconds. And I thought, as he sat down, what in God's name have I just done? What am I going to do? I don't know what to say. And I shot up an arrow prayer. You know what that is. You say, help. That's all. It's just that. And I turned to him and said, I really don't know what you've gone through. I didn't suffer like you suffered, but I can tell you someone did. And I don't think you are as innocent as you might make yourself out to be. And I certainly was not innocent. But I'll tell you, there was one suffered like you, and he was innocent. And I had never said anything like that in my life. And I thought, thanks. He was not a governor or a king. But boy, that was the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of my Father, who spoke through me that day. It leveled Joseph at that moment. And I clearly heard the message. I mean, I had no other way to talk to him, except that Yeshua had suffered way more than him. Verse 21, brother betrays brother to death. Father his child. Children rise up against parents, cause them to be hated. I mean, there's a serious opposition. There's so much suffering and pain that this ambassadorial work causes. You think, no, I want to be an ambassador of peace. I want to get along with everybody. I want to be the ambassador to Switzerland or New Zealand. I don't want to go to a shock place. I don't want to go to a brutal place. But he promises, verse 22, you'll be hated by all because of my name. Hated by all because of my name. The rabbis teach that there were three reasons that the first temple was destroyed. We were kicked out of and lost the first temple, 586 BC. Murder, adultery, idolatry. There was, however, one reason we were kicked out of Israel the second time, 70s, and for which we lost the second temple. Sinat chinam, hatred without a cause. Yeshua says, they're going to hate you without a cause. They're going to hate you really for a cause. That's a quote from the Psalm 69. Hatred without a cause. That is clearly not something that the Jewish people, we were not so innocent in the first century. Hatred without a cause was not Romans hating us causelessly. We had plenty, we gave them plenty, like the Zealots, the Sicarii, who gave them plenty of cause to hate us. But it's because of the name of Yeshua. And they'll persecute you, verse 23, in one city, flee to the next. I say, you won't finish going through cities of Judah till the Son of Man comes. Well, you got to wonder what he meant by that, since it's been 2,000 years, and Israel's a pretty small country. So some say that that Israel, of course, has to do with a wider understanding than the little dust geography between Lebanon and Egypt. I don't think that's true. I think it clearly means what's going to happen there in the first century is going to happen in cities of Israel. And so you won't finish until the Son of Man comes. So how did he come? Was that the second coming? No, obviously not. But there was some accomplishment. The boys traveled around the land of Israel. James' boys ran around with some of the other fellows went off, we know, went up to Antioch. Others went, like Thomas, to the east, to India. So the different fellows traveled all over. It might mean that the cities of Israel might have to do with cities where Jewish people were living. And if that be so, well, we still are running into Jews in India. And I remember leading one third of the Jews of Pakistan to the Lord. There were three Jews living in Pakistan. And I led one of them to the Lord in New Jersey in the 80s. Look, we're not done yet. Son of Man hasn't come yet, so we need to keep going out. And when we're persecuted in one city, flee to the next. Look, I came here in 1998 and started the work of Jews for Jesus, Sydney, all the while thinking, I wonder if I'm going to survive Sydney or where will I go next? So far, so good. Verse 24, you think you're good? A disciple's not above his teacher, nor a slave his master. In other words, I'm going to cop it, you're going to cop it. If they've called the head of the house Beelzebub, that's me, how much more will they malign the members of the house? You think you're going to escape this? So believers who listen to us here in the class tonight or who are listening online, sometimes we want to be friends of everybody and we want everybody to like us. But the reality is, James said, if you're a friend of the world, you're an enemy of God. So you to choose. Somebody's going to dislike you. You might as well be hated by the world and not by God. So, well, that's it. You don't want to be an offensive believer, but faith will often give offense. Never be our manner, though. Verse 26, don't fear them. Nothing concealed that won't be revealed, hidden. In other words, don't be afraid of people. Go proclaim what I'm telling you. And again, an ambassadorial call. Verse 28, don't fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul. Who's that? Well, that's people. That's ISIS. That's naysayers. That's it. But rather fear him who's able to destroy both soul and body. That's the living God. So fear him. I mean, fear? Is that really right? Yeah, that's what an ambassador does. He doesn't want to misrepresent. You're going to get in trouble from somebody. Better to get in trouble from the world who hates the king. Two sparrows sold is almost like nothing. But God knows everybody. Everything. Hairs are numbered. He's not just a calculator. He's not just a computer. He really cares. You're more valuable than many sparrows. That's what he's saying. Not an academic exercise that God notices. So I tell you what, if you confess me before men, I'll make sure Dad hears about it. If you deny me before men, I'm going to tell Dad, I don't know the guy. He's already said that. Remember in Matthew 7, I never knew you. Boy, you don't want to hear that. And remember what we concluded that meant in Matthew 7, I never knew you means when Yeshua says I never knew you, it means you never knew. You never knew who I was. You didn't know the love of the Father. Look, I didn't come to bring peace on the earth. Wait a minute, that's what the angels sang at the birth. Glory to the newborn king, peace on earth and mercy mild, God is reconciled. Yeah, peace to those who receive the ambassadors, but not peace to those who don't. So it really is a choice, I suppose we'd say. It's a choice between those who say yes to Yeshua and those who don't. Come to set a man against his father, daughter, and mother, daughter-in-law, mother-in-law. For son treats father contemptuously, daughter rises up against her mother, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own. Verse 38, he who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. That's really the theme of chapter 10. You're going to be an ambassador, go out, speak in my name, and it's going to be a heavy cross, not a light assignment. Go and bear witness. uprightness of the name of Yeshua. Look what happened to him. It's going to happen. Hatred without a cause is going to happen to you. Misunderstanding is going to happen to you. So welcome to the world of suffering. The kingdom of God is at hand, and it's not a luxurious home in Vaucluse with servants and a nice swimming pool. It is the hard yards. It's presence of the Lord who goes with us. Can't get away from it. It's not a matter of ease, but of someone walking with us in our dis-ease. I'm grateful to him. I hope you are too. That's Matthew 10.